You're listening to Tucson Tech Talk with your host, Aaron Moss, on Tucson Business Radio X.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Tucson Tech Talk, the show where we talk about technology, life, and business. We're broadcasting from the Tucson Business Radio X studio in the Stewart Title Building on Broadway. We want to welcome all of our listeners on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn, and we encourage you to listen live every second Monday of the month. Questions and comments are always appreciated. My name is Aaron Moss, your host. I'm the owner of Computer Doctor of Tucson. The theme for the show today is technology in the wild, wildfires. Some of the images on wildfires on social media and the news can be heartbreaking. We've seen the pictures of some of the animals and some of the men and women that actually are fighting those fires for us, and specifically the wildfires in Australia, California, and also here in Arizona. But how can these so-called natural wildfires be managed with technology and those who can shed light on the cause and effect even better than our fire suppression professionals? Joining us in the studio today, we have a Tucson fire captain, a graduate of Northern Arizona University, and has worked for the Tucson Fire Department for the past 19 years. Tucson Fire Department was established in 1881, responding to over 90,000 911 calls per year. He received his hazardous materials technician certification in 2002 and spent years as a member of the hazmat team. He is a captain on Quint 22, a fire engine and / aerial apparatus hybrid. He's going to tell us what that is. Currently, he is the interim public information officer for the Tucson Fire Department. He has a wife and three teenagers, with his oldest daughter currently attending the University of Arizona. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Captain Joshua Houseman to the program.
Hello, Aaron. Happy to be here.
Why don't you go ahead and give yourself a shout out to your wife and kids for us.
All right. Pam, Sydney, Kyle, Paige, how you doing?
Okay. Glad to have you with us. Also in the studio with us today is Tucson Fire Department Wildland Coordinator and Engineer at Station 22. He's been employed with the Tucson Fire Department for 15 years. He was also a permanent U.S. Forest Service employee working for the Sacramento Hotshots in New Mexico. He was formerly qualified as a crew boss and heavy equipment boss and future engine boss qualification. He spent 9 years in the Army National Guard as a forward observer and crash fire rescue firefighter. Do you want to go ahead and give a shout out to your wife and kids as well?
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. Amber, Logan, good morning.
Okay. For myself, I've had a history in the fire department. I want to take this opportunity. Number one, thank you, both of you, for your service that you give to the city and for all that the fire departments do with protecting life, wildlife, and human lives, you know, for that matter, and also the land, the very land and properties that we use for our lives. So it's been very much in the media about these wildfires, and these two people here in our studio, they've had some experience with dealing with these wildfires. But Joshua Houseman, he is the captain on Quint 22. So our first question is, what is Quint? What is a Quint?
What is a Quint? So a Quint is, like I gave you the title of a hybrid, it really is exactly that. It's a cross between a fire engine that you see rolling down the street and the big ladder trucks, and it's a merger of the two. So they've basically stuck a big 107-foot ladder on top of a fire engine. So it still has your booster tank with about 380 gallons of water and a pump on it, so it can roll up to a house fire as a quick attack fire engine and pull hose and put out a fire, just like a fire engine would. But at the same time, it can also be dispatched as a ladder truck and show up and reach, you know, the fourth, fifth, sixth floor of a building for mm-hmm. rescues and aerial operations.
Mm. Well, there's not a whole lot of 5- and 6-story buildings in Tucson. So right. Do you get to use it much?
So it hasn't been in service long. We're going on about 3 or 4 months of service life. It's the second Quint in town, so its sister truck is sitting over at Station 17. But ladder trucks, I mean, they've been used for years since the department was started. So we do have, you know, some large buildings downtown. We have some big industrial areas, and it can be used as an aerial master stream where you're putting it up as a high point and raining, you know, 1,000 gallons a minute down on a fire from up above, even if the building isn't necessarily that tall.
Okay. So so that truck is mainly used for local things happening in Tucson. So now Arizona gets wildfires from time to time too. What type of apparatuses or equipment or tools are being used as far as that goes? So what is the current status of the wildland program?
Well, right now Tucson Fire has seen a need for some more apparatus and higher training regarding the wildland arena. Throughout history in the Sonoran Desert, typically it doesn't sustain a lot of wildland fire. If you go out to the Desert Museum, you'll see native cactus vegetation without a lot of ground fuel in between. So there's not a lot to carry fire or sustain fire. But we have invasive species, buffel grass, et cetera, that are kind of filling in those voids now, and it's becoming more of a problem. In addition, with the proximity of how we build homes and subdivisions, and lighter materials in the mm-hmm. homes. But back to Tucson, we don't have a lot of apparatus. We're trying to build a program right now, and we're looking at acquiring a higher capability water tender and looking to possibly get some very specific wildland apparatus. We do have a couple older brush trucks that can get the job done, mm-hmm. but we're hoping to upgrade those capabilities in the future.
So when you say that you're trying to upgrade the water capability, so I would assume that means larger tanks to hold larger amounts of water?
Yes, exactly. Right now we have two Type 6 trucks, which is basically a Ford pickup truck with 250 gallons, 300 gallons, and a small auxiliary pump on the rear. Mm-hmm. What we want to do, of course, budget is a limiting factor everywhere, always, mm-hmm. right? So we want a Type 3 apparatus, which is a larger truck, four-wheel drive, 500 gallons a minute, 500 GPM pump. In addition to a water tender, which is basically a way to shuttle 3,000 gallons of water, mm-hmm. but have added capabilities, spray bars in the front with a master stream or turret capabilities where it can spray from inside the cab.
There are fire hydrants all around town. So would it be better to just have longer hoses to connect to those? Or they're not very reliable?
No, we've had for inside the city limits, we have standards of how far apart those hydrants are. And so when you have residential homes or industrials, those specifications change as to how close the hydrants have to be. But there's still large areas of brush and desert in town.
Where there's
nothing.
I'm
thinking of the we call the Emerald Forest off of Golf Links, that's just acres and acres of open land, and there aren't hydrants sitting in those. So when you have brush fires.
So you got to bring your own water.
It's a haul, correct.
Yeah.
Our great infrastructure has allowed us the ability to not really have a wildland team in the past because we have a lot of good resources. We've got a great city water system that gets water in most places, but it's those peripheral edges. And as Captain Houseman said, it's the washes where you don't have access that we're kind of looking at.
Okay. And the so when is it okay? So there's a lot of listeners that may be living in some of these outer, open land areas here in Tucson. But as far as within city limits, when is it okay to have a fire? Like, could someone just have a bonfire?
Right. That's a lot of what we do is educating the public as to when it is okay to have a fire. And a recreational fire that's in a confined pit, or in like a chimney or some barbecue, those are acceptable in town, and they need to be within 3 feet wide and 2 feet tall. But you know, if it's a cooking fire outdoors or a social fire that the neighborhood's gathered around, and it's on somebody's private property and it's within those sizes and it is contained, it's a legal fire. The problem we get into is people that think it's okay to burn brush or weeds or have the propane torch, and they're cleaning up their property. that is not legal in the city of Tucson. The big brush fire, if you're trimming your mesquites and you make a large pile of brush and it's just sitting in the dirt, mm-hmm. and you're burning that to get rid of it, that's not legal in the city. So in the past, we used to be able to have a burn permit. That's no longer an option. You have to haul that away. It has to get to either the Greenfield landfill or...
Well, it I had a lot of experience because when I got married and my wife and I, we bought a mobile home. We were in the back of my grandparents' land, which was just full of trees and brush. And one of the cheapest ways to get rid of it all was actually to burn it. So we called the fire department. We got a 3-day burn permit. But this was in Pima County. This was just outside of the city of Tucson. So I guess they still allow it. I don't know how long that no burn permit has been in existence. But we were able to obtain, and we burned just about everything back there, and that's where our house is sitting right now. It's from stuff that we had burned. But February, the month of February. So we're recording this towards the end of January. For many of our listeners that might be listening to this podcast for a later date, February 2020 is National Burn Awareness Week. Okay. And so what is the Tucson Fire Department, I guess, doing as far as burn awareness?
So we'll be putting out social media posts and public safety announcements and really just getting the word out to burn awareness is exactly that. It's just making sure people are aware of the hazards of it. Last year, they were really focusing on scalds and hot water is the stove, cooking mm-hmm. scalds. Even bathtub, 102, I believe, is as hot as they want water to be, when you're washing a child. But, this year it's more contact burns and just any hot item like, curling irons, hair straighteners, just the household things that people are using that if left unattended can injure children.
Actually, my niece, I saw her just the other day and, she had a cast on her hand and I said, "What happened?" She says, "My curling iron fell and I went out to catch," and she caught it. but she burned her hands. So I hope that it was just a minor, but we don't think of things like this. Sometimes we forget that surfaces are hot and we can end up with these. I know in my training, hand burns and face burns are treated much higher than because that's your life, your hands and your face. So if you get a burn on your hand or your face, that can be very, very detrimental. It can be life-changing to someone. But back to our wildland. So we have a question here. What is the wildland urban fire, and how is it different from the wildland urban interface?
Well, the wildland urban interface is the most common term that you'll hear. And what's that? That's speaking of is a geographic location where the edge of the city meets the wildland or the edge of the forest, edge of the desert. It's where those two environments come together. Wildland urban fire is probably a better term from what you're seeing in California, where entire neighborhoods are being wiped out from fire. So wildland urban fire is considered a set of conditions rather than a geographic space. And a lot of that has to do with what's the NFPA calls the home ignition zone. That is the zone around the home that creates a set of conditions that allows a home to burn. Back to the conversation earlier, why we don't allow fires inside of the city that's uncontained. Most people don't realize that most wildland fire burns homes down by the spread of embers before the main fire gets there. We see a giant wall of fire. That's what you're going to see on the news. Typically, homes are burning down ahead of that. If you watch these fires in Australia, they have the record. These embers can be cast 20 miles in advance of the main fire front.
20 miles?
20 miles. And again, back to a set of conditions, if you have a low humidity, that's what allows that ember to continue to burn. Depending on how much convective heat you have rising off the fire, that gives its lift capabilities to carry that chunk of wood or piece of a pine cone or something along those lines. And then the low humidity allows it to burn. And as soon as it lands in a receptive fuel bed, it could be anything from grass at the edge of your house, pine needles in the gutter of your roof. These are the things, everybody's been evacuated. It's in front of the fire. It's dangerous for firefighters to get out there. Mm-hmm. And this is what allows homes to burn. So this wildland urban fire is the set of conditions and the capability for fire to burn through an urban area in the manner of a wildland fire.
Okay. Now, people that live in Tucson, we were talking about the, what was that neighborhood on the east side? Is it east of Golf Links where it's just open field?
Right.
Okay. So would some of those areas be technically a wildland urban interface where real wildland meets?
You know, I think you could classify it as that. Our heaviest vegetation areas in the city are washes or are corridors where, you know, we accumulate quite a bit of water. They're left wild for the most part. We have a heavy overgrowth of mesquites. You have these invasives of buffel grass and other non-native grasses that are filling in the wash. In addition to, that's where the homeless like to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to have fires to stay warm. And so often they're left unattended.
I didn't think about that.
And the potential exists to where they leave these fires unattended. It starts burning the grass. The day warms up. It's, you know, it's typical.
Wind picks up.
Typical day in June, right? We have high wind, low humidity, high temperatures, and this fire's left unattended, and it gets up into some trees. The tree can torch out, cast embers into somebody's yard, catch something in their yard, which could potentially catch their house on fire. Mm-hmm. As soon as the house catches on fire with a 30 or 40 mile an hour wind, if we're not there to suppress it immediately, the potential to spread into other homes is high.
So if someone is living like right next to a wash, because there's lots of washes all within Tucson, so what do people living near washes just need to be aware of? Smoke or on occasion, or should they go out there with their hose every so often, keep it wet or something?
The weeds in their own yard. I mean, buffel grass is burning it when it's over 1,000 degrees and it's dense, and you'd almost want to create your own fire break where you're controlling the weeds in your yard so that contact that the grass is in that wash can't run up and underneath, like especially a mobile home. I mean, that can get underneath a home just and what looks to be benign, you know, grass is burning hot enough to light a structure on fire.
Okay.
Absolutely. Reducing that receptive fuel bed around your home. Spanish tile roofs are common here in Tucson. They have the convex portion underneath where the birds like to make a nest inside that little gap in there. If it's not filled with concrete or something, birds make a nest, which is a perfect receptive fuel bed for that ember.
Mm.
So maintaining around your house, keeping the grass cut down. You don't want to have any vegetation touching your house. You don't want to have firewood staged on the porch because this firewood can receive these embers.
Mm-hmm.
The firewood catches the porch on fire, which burns the house down. So yeah, just maintaining around your place, keeping an open canopy in the trees. It's nice to have a lot of vegetation, but you know, given a right set of conditions, that could actually come back and bite us.
Mm. So that kind of answers the question about what people can do to mitigate their risk to wildland and urban fires. Is there any other technology that you guys are aware of that homeowners can use in Tucson to help with fires, even in and around the house?
There's an app out there through the Pima County Emergency Department that it's called Everbridge. And Everbridge is a mass alerting text or a notification system.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a pretty strong campaign in the past to get the information out. But what it allows, it's a subscription-based app. And so if you go in and choose to subscribe to it, you're accepting notifications from Pima County. And then Tucson Fire can actually send notifications to Pima County, whether that's for evacuation, a hazmat incident, to where, similar to an Amber Alert.
Almost a Pulse Point type app.
Yeah, similar to a Pulse Point. Mm-hmm. So if you voluntarily go and sign up for it and allow these push notifications, if there is an emergency, let's say a wildfire in the city that has the potential to spread, an evacuation notice or alert can be sent out to subscribers.
And that's on the same premise of the type of technology that when you would have TV alerts or radio alerts, emergency broadcast systems. So you can now have this on an app and it's basically you only get them for your location. Also, our cell phones, they have these alerts that are on them. So, and what's the name of that app again?
Everbridge, and then you would sign up through Pima County Emergency Operations.
Okay, so so Everbridge, so our listeners, if you want to check that out, you can. That sounds like it might have applications for several different places. So it sounds like you would probably have to load it and then select your county within that app. That's what that sounds like.
Yes, absolutely. But if you allow it to track your location, geolocate you, it's going to give you an alert no matter where you are. So you can choose your home location. But if you're driving around town and there's alert for that specific region and your GPS shows you that you're there, then it'll give you an alert for that region as well.
Right. Now, the alerts that we get on our phones, you know, it could be we can get a flash flood, okay, and then you're caught out in the rain, and then by the time you get into your car all wet, you know, from the rain, then you get this beep, beep, beep. Oh, by the way, there's a flash flood in your area right now. Said, I know that. You know, it would be nice if we can get these things maybe like a minute ahead of time. I don't even know if the technology is out there. Maybe we ought to get a weather person in here and plan for that. So anyway, what is planned for the future as far as wildland fires going? You mentioned that you're trying to get some more equipment for that, but what can people do? You know, we answered questions about what people can do in Arizona, but what can people, if someone has family, for example, in Australia, or family or friends in California, what can they say to help them?
Some of the things we've already talked about, you know, as far as just keeping the yard, the stack of firewood away from your home, cleaning roofs. I mean, Tucson doesn't have the wood shingle roofs that you see in a lot of other parts of the country, but keeping that roof clean, even in Tucson, if you have a roof that's collecting leaves and pine needles or anything like that, we have palm tree fires that will rain embers down on roofs and catch homes on fire. So just keeping that clean buys you time. You have suggestions?
You know, I just think so many people assume they, you know, when they watch the news, they see big fire in timber. I mean, it produces 100-foot flame lengths. And I think a lot of people neglect the danger of the desert. Some of the common denominators that are taught to wildland fires are light, flashy fuels, small fires or isolated portions of large fires. So never underestimate the fire spread potential in grass because it's a light fuel. It changes to the environment quickly. As soon as it's hot outside, it dries out. We could have rain yesterday and a nice sunny day today, and that grass is dried out and it's primed and ready to burn. And there's nothing that moves fire faster than grass, which some people have a tendency to let their guard down, but it's what moves the fastest and catches you. So just have good situational awareness, really.
I know that firsthand because we had a fire at our house and it was my fault. I was burning brush in a 55-gallon steel drum and I waited for the fire to go down. And then I walked away. An ember must have came off, dropped down. There was grass there. It traveled 6 feet to a woodshed. The woodshed is now gone, completely burned, and everything in it. So we had to go through insurance to get everything. But fortunately, nobody was hurt. I tried to, all we had like was a little garden hose, but that little garden hose did nothing, almost nothing.
So
I'm so thankful that the fire department was able to get there in time and put it out because it even singed just by the heat. The heat traveled 12 feet from where our house was, and it singed and even melted the a lot of the rubber and plastic around the window. It broke. It was a two-pane window. It broke the outside pane.
Sure.
Okay. The intense heat. I couldn't even walk through there. And we had some old paint cans and oil cans inside the thing. And I was afraid there was going to be an explosion. So I didn't even try to get around there and at least wet the house. I was worried about the house kit going up, you know?
Sure. A lot of people will just dump some water on a fire and they don't realize as a wildland firefighter, in order to guarantee that it's out, you literally take an ungloved hand. And at first you use the back of your hand because it's pretty sensitive. You don't want to burn the front side where you have your dexterity, but you feel for heat at the back side of your hand. And then afterwards you, what we call cold trailing. You literally run your hands through it. And if you can put your hand in it, it's cool enough to be left alone.
Okay.
But you can't just visually assume that it's completely out until you've done that.
Okay, so back of the hand, and then if that's cool, run your fingers
right,
through it.
Whether that's a campfire or something like
that's
that.
That's how you know it's completely
out.
Okay.
Then you can walk away and leave it. Until then, you can't guarantee anything.
Okay.
Well, and because you're a technology show, we can tell you a little about a thermal imaging camera that we use as some of our tech on our truck, which we're looking at fires afterwards when we go back into a home after a house fire or even your shed fire, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that fire is out. We can hit it with a thermal imaging camera, and it's down to the single degree, and make sure that fire is completely out and cool down to, you know, 80 degrees or whatever the ambient temperature
is. Is there any way I can borrow that thermal?
You can buy thermal imaging cameras fairly inexpensively now at hardware stores. It might just be a laser that's pointing to a dot, but it'll tell you, you know, very accurately how hot a wall is or, yeah.
Okay. I might need to go ahead and get mine because in the summertime I like my house nice and cold, so I like to see where all the hot spots are. Be so cool to just have to just run a live camera around and that red spot, right. That's a hot spot. And do
yeah.
something about
well, the
that.
Companies that are insulating homes in town are bringing those now, and they're showing you your wall before and after they've added the insulation to show you from the inside where the heat's getting through.
Thank you very much, both of you for doing the show today. Up next in our program, representatives from the Reed Park Zoo talk to Tucson Tech Talk about our friends, the koalas, the kangaroos, and wildfire effect on the ecosystem. Stay tuned.